Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Right about now.
The Funk Soul Brother, right check it out now. EDH music, blah, blah, blah,
right
blah.
About now.
Welcome, everybody. It is episode 50.
How's it?
I am Josh Lee Kwai.
And I'm Jimmy Wong.
Yeah, and you're listening to the 50th episode of The Command Zone.
Wow, dude, we did it.
We have nothing special planned outside of a fun episode. Actually,
we just sort of realized that it's episode 50 and we're like, we should do something. That was the something you just heard.
Yeah. Just us screaming in delight at 12 in the morning.
It's late. Yeah. We're a little tired because... Well, Jimmy had to go see Mad Max tonight, so that pushed our recording time back, and, you know.
I thought the movie was going to be like an hour and a half. No, it was two hours plus of just explosions. I was like, how could you even afford this? Like, usually these kinds of movies are short because they cost so much to make. I was amazed when I stepped out of the theater. I was like, it's 9? Oh, my gosh. All right. So it's episode 50. Let's just do a shout-out to our listeners. Thank you guys for being a part of the show. Those of you that have been around
so
since
much,
episode one, awesome. Those of you that joined us when you heard us on Brainstorm Brewery or when Wedge came on or the Professor came on, you guys are awesome too.
Yeah, we've had such a good time doing it so far. We're going to keep doing it, obviously. And I just can't believe we're at 50 already. It seems like it came really fast. I mean, we cheated. Yeah.
We did cheat by doing two episodes a week,
but
it's twice as much content, so hey.
We still have to do the episodes, so it's not totally cheating. It's more like Fast Bond than it is like Channel.
That's right. We did Fast Bond ourselves there.
Yeah.
Make sure you guys tell your friends about the podcast as well, unless you don't want them learning all the secrets, of course.
No, you should tell them, because you want your friends to become better at, you know, building their decks and playing the game, so that'll make you have to force you into like doing the same thing, and that's how you get really good.
And that's how you have more fun playing.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets more complicated.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting to level up with your play group. It's awesome. Tell your friends about the podcast. We'd love to have them as listeners as well. And of course, hey, free prizes. Come on, guys.
Free prizes.
Prizes left and right. Let's actually talk about our contest. We talked about this
Speaking of free prizes.
Yeah, we talked about this on Tuesday. We are a contest sponsored by Del Rey Books. We've mentioned their books before, and it turns out these guys actually have a Commander playgroup as well, which is really exciting. The novel, The Warded Man by Peter V. Brett, is going to be sent out to some lucky winners. It could be you.
It could be you. So keep listening to the show. Right before the end step, we will announce the winners of the brand new shiny Warded Man books, which is an awesome book. I have read it a few times, actually.
Yeah.
And then after you read it, we definitely want to hear what you think. So tweet at us, you know, after you get your book and read it.
Mm-hmm. So if you guys listened to Tuesday's episode, we announced how to enter to the contest. That's why you guys should always, of course, listen to every episode of The Command Zone.
Because you always, you know, you never know when there's going to be a prize.
You never know. It could be the 50th episode. It could be just the 51st episode. It could be a prize, a giveaway. Who knows? It doesn't have to tie to a number.
You never know. You never know.
You never know. Unless it's Dragon Week, in which case there's going to be tons of giveaways because I can't wait to do it again next year. But yeah, we announced how to enter in the last episode. We'll announce the winners at the end of the show. Thank you again to Del Rey Books for helping ship out and supply these awesome books to our listeners. So
yeah, very exciting. And we're excited to continue to do this promotion with them in the future also. So there'll be more books that you can win. So don't worry. If we don't call your name this time, you get a chance next time.
Yeah. All right. And we are also on YouTube. Another announcement. You guys can check out the channel. The links will be below. You can subscribe to our YouTube page.
Please subscribe to our YouTube page.
Yeah, it's an easier way if you have YouTube subscriptions to get an email notification when the video goes up, or just to see it on your front page when you go to youtube.com. If you guys don't know, we do full-on video versions of every single one of these podcasts. We have cool dynamic backgrounds that we're working on. It's all pretty and very relaxing to look at, and we show you all the cards.
Oh, yeah. We should say, we forgot to mention this on last episode.
Yes.
We should say that if you have watched our videos in the past, we've been working on some animation for the backgrounds. So I actually took a bunch of the art from Magic the Gathering and then animated it. So we're going to have some new fancy animated backgrounds on these newer episodes. So it's definitely worth going and checking those out. They look pretty cool, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like great. It's like kind of like a free screensaver if you're not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, put it up on the second monitor if you're at work. Don't slack off, of course. But
just tell your boss when he walks by, he's like, what is that? Oh, it's a screensaver.
It's a screensaver, yeah. It shows random magic cards occasionally.
But I'm doing my work.
Yeah.
I'm totally working.
Don't mind when it shows at JF Wong, at Josh Lee Kwai on the road. Those are the guys that made the screensaver.
I will get those TPS reports done on time, I promise. Great.
Yeah, so we're on YouTube. Please subscribe to the channel. That's it. We're going to potentially upload some fun content there in the future, but it's also just a great way to get all the stuff delivered to you in video format. So if you're not driving around and watching the episodes, you can do it.
Oh, yeah, don't watch them in your car. Only listen in your car.
Unless you're parked, clearly.
Good point. While you're driving your car, don't... Yeah.
Yeah, but it is nice to be able to see the art and the car when it comes up, and that's why the video is there, because it's another way to learn, because you learn by looking at something visually, hearing it, by playing with it in your hands. You know, all these things add together to help you become a better player. All
very well said. And lastly, before we get into our main topic, which we should say, our main topic today is going to be a revisitation of a deck that we talked about in the very first episode.
Yeah.
So we're revisiting Marchesa, or Marquesa, or however the heck you pronounce it.
I like the way you do it on the website. Marchesa.
Marchesa. That's how we originally pronounced it, and then we switched to Marquesa, and then we found out that Wizards wants us to pronounce it Marchesa. But then, of course, Wizards doesn't actually know how things are supposed to be pronounced, so now we don't even know who we're supposed to believe.
Yeah, it's Marchesi.
Marchesaroni.
Marchesaroni. It's kind of like a hell of a...
So this is our first revisiting of a deck, and we've retuned it, and we've sort of... We both went in different directions with it, so we have two different versions, and we're going to talk about all the stuff, why we decided to totally revamp it, and why we each chose the direction we did. But before we get into that, one last thing.
GP Vegas, coming up, the gathering that we're hosting. We've been talking about it a lot. We have the information now. It's very exciting.
Yes, we've got all the info gathered up. Josh and I have contacted a bunch of different places in Vegas. Got the best deal because we got to min-max this too, and we found the best place to have our gathering.
Well, you're a Magic player. You got to min-max everything, right? So, okay, we've talked about the date. It is Thursday, May 28th. So that's a week from when you're hearing this podcast. If you listen to it the day it gets released, I guess. It's going to be from 7 p.m. until 1 a.m. It's going to be at the Plaza Hotel, which is in downtown Vegas, just at the end of Fremont Street. And we're going to have a banquet hall there. There's going to be snacks, soda, beer. It's going to be sweet.
It is going to be sweet. But it's not endless, and it's definitely not a replacement for dinner. So make sure you guys do eat something before you show up. Otherwise, you're going to just have a lot of snacks in your belly for all night, and that will not be fun for you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Please eat dinner first. We are going to have food and beverages, but it's not going to be probably enough for like a full meal. So bring your best, most unique EDH deck. That's the most important thing.
Yes, definitely. We're going to be giving out tons of prizes for stuff like most unique deck. Also, just like Spirit of the Game Award. I think that's probably going to go to someone under the age of 10 if they show up just for being a player. But yeah, we're going to be giving away just fun random prizes throughout the night. We're also going to be doing tons of conspiracy mashup drafts and maybe some chaos drafts. Whatever, basically anything cool that we can come up with.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun. We're going to play a lot of that stuff by ear, but there will be prizes to give away. Wizards has given us a whole bunch of stuff. And also, there's going to be a bunch of prominent members of the community we're hoping there.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so like the professor from Tolarian Community College has said he's planning on coming. Reverend In Fuego from BJ Shea's Geek Nation.
Oh, yes, the wonderful Alex and Ben from Masters of Modern, our sister podcast. And hopefully, as well as some of the guys from the Five Commanders podcast and some of the Brainstorm Brewery crew. So lots of really awesome guests, lots of really awesome people. And they've all been guests on our show, so we are very happy to have them there.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a Facebook event set up. There'll be links in the show notes. That's a good way to go and find the specific details, since you're probably driving I doubt that people wrote all this down. So that's the place to check that out, and also to let us know that you're coming, because we do have a general headcount. But, you know, if you haven't let us know previously, or even if you have, you can check in there. And then also following us on Twitter is a really good idea, just because as it gets closer to the event, you know, if any particulars change or you want updates, then that's going to be the best way to sort of keep the most up to date.
Yeah, exactly. And we know a lot of you guys don't have Twitter. You guys have let us know that. And of course, we also like had this, you guys RSVP through email, but I'm pretty sure most people have Facebook. So go ahead and RSVP on the Facebook event page. It's all in the more info below the podcast in the show notes. And yeah, if you guys want more up-to-date notifications, we're also going to be sending out messages from Facebook if something drastic happens, like the change in venue or whatever. But in general, just small updates. Also as to where Josh and I may be in Vegas, if you guys want to meet up beforehand, just follow us on Twitter at CommandCast.
Oh yeah, I think that's going to be really important. If you're in town for the GP and you, well, if you can't make the gathering, or even if you can, following us on Twitter is going to be a really good way to find us, because we're hoping to find people for EDH games like in between rounds or once we drop out, or, you know, there's all day Friday where the GP hasn't even started yet. So, you know, we want to get to see and meet as many listeners as possible, and Twitter is going to be the best place to just connect. And I know people are really hesitant to join Twitter if they're not already on it. I mean, you can join it and then quit and then just delete your account right after the GP if you want to do that. But, you know, yeah, we want to be able to meet you, and that's really the best way.
Yeah, exactly. Think of it as a, like, you know what, you can sign up for those like SMS services where it's like, oh, you get a text every time something happens or whatever. Just imagine it's kind of like that. You don't have to follow anyone you don't want to. And if you're done with Twitter and you don't want to use it afterwards, just, you know, never open the app again on your phone.
I'm super excited. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so definitely check out the show notes for all that information. If you guys have any extra questions, you can email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com, post on the Facebook event page, or tweet at us at commandcast.
Cool. All right, let's move into our main topic.
And we are revisiting
Marchesa. All right, let's read Marchesa really quickly. It's Marchesa the Black Rose. She costs 1 and Grixis, so that's 1 blue, black, and red. 4 total for a legendary creature. Human wizard, she's a 3-3. She has Dethrone, which says whenever this creature attacks the player with the most life or tied for the most life, put a 1-1 counter on it. She also says, other creatures you control have Dethrone. And then her last text is, whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, return that card to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. So,
pretty cool.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on there. Dethrone's a big thing. She recurs your guys. Basically, the big part is, if anything you control dies and it has a 1-1 counter on it, it comes back into play at the beginning of the next end step.
Dethrone is just one way of getting that +1/+1 counter on. It's inherently great for multiplayer because you're always attacking the person with the most life total or tied for it. And there is a lot of shenanigans that can happen. Also, notably, this isn't broken because it doesn't happen immediately.
The stuff comes back at the end step.
End step, yeah. So there is a period of time where Marchesa isn't on the board, where she might be sitting in the graveyard. There's lots of stuff that
graveyard
that combats
shenanigans,
her,
graveyard hate can sort of get rid of her. Yeah. There's not like infinite stuff directly with that recurrence ability.
Notably, you can also steal people's stuff, sack them, and get them kind of permanently.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about
control.
That in a minute because of the wording.
But there's lots of fun stuff to do with this, and so Josh and I, over the months since we deck tech this, have built two different decks.
Yeah, so well, let's go back in time and talk about the original deck that we talked about in episode one. Now, if you want to, you can listen to episode one and hear that. In fact, I recently listened to the first episode.
How was it?
It was horrible. It was horrible.
I don't want to listen to it, although I remember when we recorded it being like, that was great.
Yeah. It's horrible. You like, within the first two syllables that you say, I'm like, oh wow, we're way better now.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because it's just, for one, I sound like I'm just like half asleep. Like the energy level is like super low key.
Yeah, we didn't even know each other that well back then. We just kind of were like, want to do a podcast?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
I mean, we'd played Magic, but yeah, not a ton. Like, yeah, well, we certainly hadn't spent hours and hours just talking to each other and recording it.
Trying to be a radio broadcast. Yeah.
It's tough to listen to.
A ringing endorsement.
Just from the quality level, but also
the audio quality level is still high, though.
Yeah, that's
that.
Actually true. The audio level, you nailed it from the start with that. The editing's good, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the deck itself was a deck we built around the modular mechanic, and modular creatures are artifact creatures that come in with +1/+1 counters, and when they die, you can take those counters and put them on other artifact creatures. We basically thought Dethrone was like bad and tough to control because it sort of forced it told you to attack certain players rather than you allowing sort of strategy to determine who you attacked.
Yeah, and that still stays true, I think. It is tough to control.
It is, although you found a way around that with your build, which I very much liked.
Yeah, so did you, actually.
So let's talk about what was sort of wrong with that build that we talked about in the first one.
Yeah, you had to get a lot of modular cards out, for one, to really make it work, and there was a lot of things and pieces that had to go with that.
A lot of moving parts.
Yeah,
Marchesa and the modular is not an artifact creature, So modular doesn't really even work with her. And one of the things you really have to do with the Marchesa deck is protect her.
Yeah.
So you need to get 1/1 counters on her. And modular doesn't do that in any way. So you have all these creatures in there that just don't interact directly with the general. Now, she allows them to recur, but it's just way harder to protect her, which I think was a big issue.
Yeah, and the modular cards themselves just aren't that powerful.
That's a really good point. A lot of them are like 1/1s for one. Yeah. Or a 1/1 flyer for two.
Pretty just womp womp.
Arcbound Ravager is super powerful, but the rest of them are just like under-costed, slightly inefficient. And because you can't have the redundancy of having four of each copy or anything, mm-hmm. you know, there's only like 11 or 12 modular creatures.
Yeah.
That
those
existed.
Cards, yeah. Those cards are also not winning you the game anytime soon.
Yeah, they're not going to attack and win. And so just recurring them with sac effects, it just ended up being like the deck just didn't do a lot. And then often Marchesa would just get removed or tucked at the time, and you just be completely hosed. The whole deck doesn't even do anything now
because
the modular creatures just aren't good on their own, and you had a really hard time protecting Marchesa with that deck.
Yeah, you're trying to essentially play on your own board according to your own rules, and if you didn't get the right pieces together, it just kind of fell flat on its face.
Yeah.
And someone else is like casting like Massacre Worm or Grave Titan and just being like, oh, guess what? This card by itself is way better than your six cards trying to like fiddle around and have a fun time.
Yeah,
like,
you're doing all this crazy stuff. I hit you for 12.
Yeah. Blightsteel Colossus? Unblockable? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I also think like it shows we've gotten a lot better with just deck building in general and especially explaining it on the show, but just the deck seemed really low on card draw and mana ramp. Which is just something that we've really shorn up lately in our decks, and our decks just always have enough of that, and it's just so much of the glue that holds a good deck together. It's just those things. So, all right, let's talk about what we did about it. So those are all the issues we saw with the original deck, mm-hmm. and then this is sort of where we diverge, because we each did separate builds.
Yep. By the way, if you're an astute listener, you probably have already guessed what Josh did with it, but we'll talk about that soon.
Yeah, we have definitely referred to it in the past.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about yours first, Jimmy.
Yeah, this is probably my deck is the version that we've talked about the most. This was actually Marchesa is kind of my first commander in a way.
Uh-huh.
I started with Drownu Lich Lord, which was just blue black, and I eventually evolved that to Helluva, which is Grixis as well. And that eventually became Marchesa when she came out, because I saw the colors and I was like, this is the deck I want to make.
Because mm-hmm.
It had a ton of, it was a 4CMC general, so you could get it out pretty easily. And for me, I really like the idea of stealing other people's stuff.
Right.
Because at the time, Insurrection was one of my favorite cards in EDH, because I was like, how does it get better than this?
And it's great with Marchesa.
Yeah, exactly.
We should read really quickly. So the part of Marchesa that sort of works with stealing other people's stuff
are what we
call threaten effects. So a threaten effect is an effect that takes somebody's creature just for the turn. So
gives
usually
it haste,
usually it says something like gain control of target creature, untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. Mm-hmm. So you have to give it back at end of turn. But Marchesa says whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, return that card to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. So what you do is you steal their creature, you attack somebody with the most life, so it's dethroned, so that card, that creature gets a +1/+1 counter on it, and then you sacrifice it,
mm-hmm.
and it had a +1/+1 counter on it, so it comes back to play under your control for good after that. So that's the reason that Marchesa works really good with what we call threaten effects, Insurrection being the biggest threaten effect there is, because it takes everybody's creatures all at once.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Usually it says under its owner's control, and then it would go back to the original person. But because it says under your control, then the threaten effect, it's essentially a new card when it comes back.
Yep.
So it doesn't have the old text of return this to its owner's control at the end of the turn, or even like sacrifice this at the end of turn. So this is really nice. Marchesa also, we should mention, is really resilient to board wipes in a way, because if the +1/+1 counter is on her, you can sack her or have her die in any number of ways when a board wipe happens, and her effect hits the stack and it won't trigger until the end step, and she'll come back. She won't have
She triggers herself, basically.
So she's very resilient in that way. That's why, if for instance, the thing is, she does spend a whole amount of time, usually a couple of phases or whatever, in the graveyard, and that's when she's the most vulnerable, because she's your general, and she could get...
She's your general.
True. Well, yeah. True. I guess in this case, because the tuck rule is gone, actually, it's a lot better because...
Yes, it's way better.
Yeah.
It makes her a lot more powerful.
Because I believe if she's in the graveyard and someone tries to exile her, yes. then you can just put her back in the command zone.
Yeah, anytime she would change zones, you can choose to put her back into...
Right.
Yeah. So, and the last thing about your deck that I really like is that you sort of figured out a way to use Dethrone to your advantage by controlling your own life total.
Yeah, that's... probably the most important thing is because if you are not careful, you dethrone someone and then it's like, oh, I guess I'm on the throne now because I attacked
and
all these
creatures. And you can't attack yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, you never want to be the one with the most life because then Dethrone's turned off.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about my build. So my build has sort of stretched a little bit. It went into threatened effects where I would steal something and then sack it and keep it forever. And then I realized that how much hate it was drawing and people started tucking. Marchesa really...
actively aggressively.
Yeah, she would always get countered, and I realized it's probably because I'm stealing everyone's stuff and they don't like it when I steal their stuff. So I kept a little bit of the threat effects in there, but I just sort of got rid of some cards that gave too much aggro and just took in some new cards from new sets and decided to be more self-interactive in a way. So like I'm having a lot of fun making my board bigger, but it doesn't necessarily make your gameplay experience worse,
mm-hmm.
but it puts me in the better position to hopefully win.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose this direction mostly just to stop drawing hate.
Well, let's talk about some key cards that are...
Talk about some key cards. Ray of Command actually used to be in there. I actually took it out for... just because it was a one-time use, and I was like, I don't want it. But Ray of Command is a great card in this deck. It's 3 and a blue for an instant. Untap target creature and opponent controls and gain control of it until end of turn. It gains haste, and when I lose control of the creature, tap it. So it's actually a really good threat and effect in general.
It's an instant, which is unlike most threat and effects.
Yes.
That's the big part. They can attack you. You can be like, I'll grab that one of your creatures and block your own creature with
and
it.
And then put a counter on it somehow and then sack it.
Yeah, or I can just grab it during my turn. And do that. So
yeah. So Ray of Command is really good. I started working more, actually, I realized, in this deck with reanimation effects,
mm-hmm.
because I found there's a lot more fun to be had in terms of cards coming back from the graveyard and stuff that applies to that, and also stuff that had like persist and stuff on it.
Right.
And cards
so
like,
stuff's going to come back no matter what, even if she's not out.
Yeah, exactly. Because we talk about that a lot. The deck needs to function without the general as well. And one of my favorite cards to use in Commander to get cards back is Victimize. It's a sorcery for 2 and a black. Choose 2 target creature cards in the graveyard. Sacrifice a creature. If you do, return the chosen cards to the battlefield tapped. So you get freaking 2 cards for sometimes a token.
Or sometimes that card that you sacrifice has a +1/+1 counter on it,
mm-hmm.
so that it just comes back. So you basically... 2 cards into play for nothing.
Yeah. Ideally, the point of my deck is you never want a creature dying and you're unhappy about it.
Right.
Usually when creatures die in this deck, you're like, great, that's fine. I'll get it back later. Or it was awesome because it's going to come back. Or it has persist on it or something.
Right. Or it brings something else back when it dies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all the cards are able to do that to a reasonable degree. Another card that was a all-star that I found out about in Conspiracy was Treasonous Ogre.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really about controlling life total. It's 3 and a red for a 2/3 Ogre Shaman with Dethrone on it. And you can pay 3 life to add red to your mana pool.
So it's kind of like a really, it's like a fair channel almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a super powerful effect by itself is you're turning life into mana. And then if you also want to actively lower your life total just so that you're not on the throne, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
And then you can attack someone.
Yeah, this is a great addition to the deck. It's really, really powerful.
Yeah, sometimes it just wins the game too because it's like, crap, if I only had 3 more mana this turn. Well, yep. It's like... Treasonous Ogre.
Yep,
go for
it. I do. I'll just cast Insurrection on turn 6 instead of turn 8.
Yeah, and when you cast that card, you win the game. Yeah. So being able to just do that, and in general, losing life is an okay thing in this deck. Like I have land like Ancient Tomb in here that taps for 2 colorless mana but does 2 damage to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally fine with that in general because, I mean, the way that I play this deck is you hold up a strong enough board so that people don't mess with you. And you're kind of board wipe immune because of Marchesa and stuff, and you just want to whittle everyone else down with you until a point where you can cast an Insurrection and reliably kill everyone.
Right, because everybody's at 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you just are at that point where you can kind of do it. Another card that came out recently, actually, it's the card that Wedge spoiled on the Manasaurus.
Mm-hmm.
It's Damnable Pact. X black, black sorcery. Target player draws X cards and loses X life.
So it's great because it's controlling your life total and drawing cards.
Yeah, exactly. So you're always going to be replace the card that you cast with more, and you can very specifically choose exactly how much life you want to to lose. And also, you can sometimes kill someone else with this card by forcing them to lose X life and draw X cards.
Very cool. Let's talk about some cards that are still there from that original build.
Yes, the number one card is Unspeakable Symbol, and this is like the card that I think every Marchesa deck has to have. It's one black for a 3-drop enchantment. Pay 3 life, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. So you're kind of doing what Treasonous Ogre does, where you get to sort of control your life total.
And it's doing what the deck really wants to do, put +1/+1 counters on stuff.
At instant speed.
Yeah. So this card was made for Marchesa.
Yeah, it was.
Even though it was made before her.
The thing is, actually, and what I realize is that, and we'll talk about this with your deck as well, but there are in Grixis, there aren't that many cards that give +1/+1 counters.
Yes, it's very difficult.
It's very difficult. Unspeakable Symbols is one of the few that does it at instant speed and reliably. Otherwise, that's usually an effect that's limited to green, specifically.
Yeah.
Green-blue kind of has that +1/+1 counter stuff going on. And another card that remains from the old is Grave Pact / Dictative Erebos, which is essentially enchantments that whenever a creature you control dies, everyone else has to sacrifice a creature. So it's an edict on a stick.
And we see often when you play this deck that you'll get the whole entire game into this lock where you are able to sacrifice your guys constantly because they keep returning.
Yeah.
And so nobody else can really keep a creature on the table.
They can't keep up with it, yeah. At least. Token decks are okay against this, but in general, like,
if you're playing a Rafik deck or something, you're huge trouble once you get Grave Packed out, because you can just sack a creature or two creatures every single turn, and they just can't keep up with it.
Yeah, and a lot of your creatures you want dying because they come back with Persist, and then you have other cards that take advantage of that, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, Grave Pact, Dictative Erebos are both pretty much the most powerful cards in the deck outside of, like, Insurrection.
Once you get those out, it's like, uh-oh, we might just be locked out of the game here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Notable cards that are now gone from the old build, and this is the big one, is figuring out which cards that don't fit anymore. Obviously, all the modular guys are gone.
Yep.
There was just too much dirtliness that didn't work with any of it. And another one that people might think would be a great fit for the deck is Purphoros, God of the Forge.
Yeah, listening to the first episode when we talked about the original Marchesa deck, we talked about Purphoros a lot. We thought he was one of the best cards in the deck.
He kind of is the bee's knees in this deck, but
he turns out he's not that great. I found in that old deck is that he's just too slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we thought, oh, we're going to be sacking creatures. They're going to be coming back into play constantly. And then it's like, no, actually, you're going to do that, but it's going to be one or two creatures a turn. And so what ends up happening is, like, yeah, you do 4 damage to everybody. Then the next turn, you do 4 damage to everybody. Like, that's going to take forever. That's not the way you're going to win.
And everyone's going to hate you for that. Like, hardcore hate you.
It's just too slow in this deck. It's not like a token deck where you're going to just put out 12 guys all in one turn and just do a massive amount of damage. So,
yeah
Purphoros, I get why you took him out. He's not in my deck either. And, I think it was a good
I mean, the deck actually surprisingly doesn't have much red in it. I think
super surprising since you're Jimmy the Red.
I know, but it does have red in it. So, I mean, Greater Gargadon is another card that's
not heavy on red. Oh yeah,
from the old build, which is my favorite sacrifice outlet of all time, because you get to do artifacts, creatures, or land on, and you just get to do it. and eventually you pop out a 9/7, which is like, all right, cool, I'm down with that. So this is the most exciting part, is new sets came out and new cards existed that are all amazing for this deck.
Yep.
And the first one by far is Reform. And this is a card that was printed with the Commander 2015 set.
You use the heck out of this guy, and it's
brutal.
Scary. Yeah.
If you get a +1/+1 counter on Reform, you essentially have a reproduction factory of just the biggest, scariest things. And with a sac outlet, you're happy to just create these monsters. Reform is a 3-1 blue drop creature. It's a 0/1 creature worm. It's underwater. It looks like a little parasite. It's terrifying. When Reform dies, put a 3/3 blue fish creature token onto the battlefield with. When this creature dies, put a 6/6 blue whale creature token onto the battlefield with. When this creature dies, put a 9/9 blue kraken creature token onto the battlefield. So if you have a sac outlet, you can immediately make this a 9/9 for 4 mana.
Yeah, and what happens is if you get a 1/1 counter on it, you sack it. It makes the next level up, basically, but then the original reform stays.
Comes back.
I've seen you do it where, like, you've done that like 5 or 6 times, and so it's like, if anybody board wipes, you have 6 dudes that get bigger.
Yeah.
And then if they board wipe, you have 6 dudes that still get bigger. Like, it's this thing is crazy in this deck.
Yeah, the fact that it comes back at instant speed, so if someone attacks at you with, like, a giant creature, you can be like, all right, I'll sacrifice my reform, like, a token until it becomes a 9/9 and block it, or just until it becomes a 6/6.
Or I'll just block your dude and then it'll just die and it'll get bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Or
and
if you want,
like, I take 0 damage and.
Or my guy trades with it and guess what? He becomes bigger or whatever. But yeah,
and
you're
the reform
right.
comes back at instep. So.
Yeah, the best part is definitely that you get to avoid board wipes with reform.
Yeah.
It's this thing that just sits there.
Not
just
avoid,
evolving.
You actually get stronger with a board wipe.
Yeah. A card like Reform is also great with like Progenitor Mimic.
Yep.
You know, anything that just spits out more of it because it's just this endless cycle and board wipes don't do anything against it. People just have to.
The worst part is literally that it's not that the board wipes do nothing. They make you stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the board wipe is actually not the answer. It's part of the problem. Like, how do you have to exile, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Merciless Eviction is like one of the few cards that does stuff.
Yep. And it's also funny because if you can't get a +1/+1 counter on, just skull clamp it, draw two cards, and just be fine with that. Yeah.
And you have all these reanimation effects, so you can always get it back.
Yeah. I'm always happy if I see Reform in my hand. Yep. Another card that I didn't put on the list, but it's Chasm Skulker.
Oh, yeah. This was on the original.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, we won't talk about it again. But Chasm Skulker essentially gets +1/+1 counters for every card you draw. And then when it dies, you put X11 blue squid creature tokens.
It's a little similar to Reform, but not as good.
This is definitely Skull Clamp's best friend.
Yeah.
You sack it, and then you have all these little dudes you can, you know, stick to the Skull Clamp. Sidisi, Undead Vizier. Actually, Exploit was a huge new addition to the deck.
Yep.
Because, again, this is a deck that wants to just get rid of things and doesn't care for it because it's coming back one way or the other. And Sidisi is essentially demonic tutoring for you, but it also comes as a 4/6 Death Touch creature for 5 mana.
Yeah, she's 4/6 Death Touch, and then she has Exploit, and that you sacrifice a creature, and then if you do that, then she demonic tutors.
Yeah, so you can also do it for herself, so it's just a 5-mana detutor if you don't have anything else on the board. But in general, there's going to be something you want to sacrifice. And
one of these little, like a Reform or a
Chasm
Skulker.
Or even the Chasm Skulker one that has 10 counters on it or whatever. Yep. So it's great because, you know, you just get a good creature on the board, and you also get a tutor, and that's always a good thing. And the other big Exploit creature that I really like that I haven't gotten to use too much, but I think will be very powerful when I get to use it, is Profaner of the Dead.
Yep.
3 in the blue from Dragons of Tarkir. It's a Naga Wizard, has Exploit, and when Profaner of the Dead exploits a creature, return to their owner's hand all creatures your opponents control with toughness less than the exploited creature's toughness.
So if you let's say exploit like that that whale that's a 6/6, then it's Cyclonic Rifts anything 6 or anything less than 6
less
toughness
than six,
out
yeah.
there that's not yours. So it's sort of like a one-sided board wipe. It's to their hand. That's why I say it's Cyclonic Rifts, but man, it's super powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it also just
Hose
kills
tokens.
Yeah, yeah. Any like shenanigans, enchantment auras on a guy all fall off, and it's all creatures, so it's not, you know, hexproof doesn't care about hexproof and all that stuff.
Yeah, very, very strong.
Yeah, so I mean, that's sort of the deck in a nutshell, what I've done with it. The deck now plays a lot more control-y than it used to, and control-y in a way that's trying not to upset people, if that makes sense. Because there's a lot of movement in this deck where you can sort of, you know, be like, hey, I can do this to this person, or look, I can point these things at this person, and it's going to make everyone's life a little better if you don't worry about it. So there's a lot of ways to position yourself as a friend of someone else. And also, like, look, I'm just dethroning the guy. He's already up top. You know?
That's an interesting thing I've noticed when you're playing it, is that the dethrone mechanic, while I initially didn't like it because it sort of dictates how you're supposed to act, who you're supposed to attack, what ends up happening is, like, I'm the guy that has the second most life. Well, I'm not that worried because I know you're not going to attack me.
Yeah, we're so instant buddies,
There's less incentive for me to team up with the guy with the most life because, well, you're going to get hit, dude, not me. And maybe I'm going to get hit after that, but that's 2 turns away. I can maybe deal with it. So the dethrone mechanic works a little bit better than I thought it would.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy dethroning people because it's really easy just for everyone to be like, okay, fine.
And also, like, you have that built-in excuse. It's almost like rolling the dice. It's like, well, I'm not actually picking on anyone. You just have the most life, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and then next turn you won't, so I'll attack somebody else. And then it's sort of people get less mad than they would if you're just choosing to attack them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suckers.
Little did they know that you actually want to hit everybody a little bit and then kill everybody all at once.
Yeah. Oh, also a card they didn't mention, Grimgrin, is great in this deck.
Oh, yeah.
You guys can read that guy, but he essentially likes +1/+1 counters. There are a few cards that I found that are really good, like Falcon Wrath Aristocrat is probably the all-star for getting +1/+1 counters on her and being a sacrifice outlet.
You want to read it?
Yeah, it's a Flying Haste 4-drop 2 and a black and a red. A 4/1 creature vampire. Sacrifice a creature. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat is indestructible this turn. If the sacrifice creature was a human, play +1/+1 counter on her.
Yeah, you have a human sub-theme, correct?
Yeah, like, and you also have like Dax Duplicate, Clever Impersonator, and a lot of other things that create other humans. Also, Machias the Unhallowed covers all the non-humans,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny. So, you know, there's enough humans in the deck that it works out well. And when you can't sacrifice a human, it's great because she just makes herself indestructible.
And well, it's she's got a sac outlet, which you need sac outlet.
So, yeah, so lots of good things about that card.
Okay, let's talk about my build.
Yes, Josh.
So I went in a completely different direction.
Have you guys guessed it?
We've talked about it a few times. What I did is I decided to hide Marchesa in the deck and make Child of Alara my front man.
What colors is Child of Alara?
Child of Alara is Wooburg.
Wow.
So I made a five-color deck. It's very much like the Chromat deck, yeah. Which is actually a Nekusar deck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's five colors. And yeah, the reason I did it, well, there's two reasons. One is, like you said earlier, green is actually the best +1/+1 counter color. So
yeah,
and if there's a second best, it's probably white. Both of those colors are not in Grixis, which is what Marchesa is. So I was like, oh, so I'm immediately opening myself up to the two best colors that synergize with Marchesa. So
yeah,
that was my big.
I was too
thing
afraid
there.
To go five color when I originally made this deck.
Well, and then the reason I chose Child of Alara over some other things is that the idea of getting a +1/+1 counter on Child of Alara, and then sacking it with Marchesa out. Means that it just comes back from the graveyard at the end step, so you can get into this loop. So let me read Child of Alara. Child of Alara is cost Wooburg, so 5 mana total, one of each color. It's a legendary creature, an avatar, 6/6. It says, when Child of Alara dies, destroy all non-land permanents. They can't be regenerated.
But they can be Marchesa at the back.
Yep. So she board wipes, or he. I don't know if the child is a boy
child
or girl.
Of Alara
it's just a child.
Is so bizarre.
Yeah, it
it's
just like looks the, crazy. I got like a crazy one baby. Here, so, which makes it even harder to tell what it is.
It's like a baby
coming out of this rock thing with lots of like laser
it's
rainbow
like,
laser beams
it's like
coming
2001
out.
Space Odyssey. It is.
Bam bam.
Dun 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 dun. Child of Alara.
That was awesome. So Child of Alara is the general.
And something to note about Child of Alara also is that when the child is your commander, in order for the effect to happen, you actually have to allow the card to go to the graveyard. So if it gets destroyed and you choose to put it into the command zone because it's your commander, it won't have the destroy everything effect.
Ah, so that is actually very interesting because in this deck, which uses Marchesa to sort of reanimate Child of Alara every single turn, there is an open period where it is very vulnerable because it's just sitting in the graveyard waiting for the end step.
Yeah, exactly. You're vulnerable to graveyard hate for that portion of time, and all, a few other things can happen. So it's just important to note that you can't just put the Child of Alara, sacrifice it, put it into your command zone, and still have the effect happen. It doesn't work that way. So
what you're saying is you create a board wipe, repeatable board wipe that can consensually shut down the rest of
that
the board.
That is the goal of the deck. The goal of the deck is to be able to sacrifice Child of Alara every turn if I want to and just keep the board wiped except my stuff, which is recurring. So let's talk about some key cards. I guess we have written down, why did I choose this direction?
Because it's way more powerful once you get all five
because
colors.
Because I'm
there.
Josh and it's five colors.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I wanted
no surprises.
I wanted to use those two colors. So let's talk about some key cards in the deck. Well, the first key card is actually a mechanic. It's the graft mechanic.
This is why I would build the deck Wooburg is
yeah.
graft.
Yeah. But, and, yeah. And actually, graft is a big theme in the new Modern Masters mm-hmm. 2015 set. So we're going to become very familiar with it. Graft just says, a creature will have graft and then a number. So I'm going to read one just so that we get an idea. I'm going to read the Plaxcaster Frogling. It's one, a green and a blue for a creature, frog mutant. It's a 0/0, but it has graft 3. So it says, this creature comes into play with 3 +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another creature comes into play, you may move a +1/+1 counter from this creature onto the new creature. So if I play Marchesa next, then I can take a +1/+1 counter off this guy and put it on Marchesa.
Ugh, that's living the dream with Marchesa.
Yeah, so I have a lot of graft guys in here so that I can always put, and there's other creatures too, so you can always move your counters around onto mm-hmm. new guys. It's very powerful. And
they
then,
actually kill itself as well if it gets on the one,
if you want
right?
to, yeah. So, and then most of the graft guys have a secondary ability that has to do with +1/+1 counters. So this guy says, for 2 mana,
target creature with a +1/+1 counter on it can't be the target of spells or abilities this turn.
So you can shroud, yeah.
Yeah, so you can give any creature you've got that has a +1/+1 counter, you can give it shroud for 2 mana.
That's insane.
Yeah. And all these graph guys have abilities like that. There's another one that says gain control of target creature with a +1/+1 counter on it. So Graft says any creature that comes into play, you can move a +1/+1 counter to it.
Oh, interesting.
So you can move it to, like, Jimmy, if you play a creature, I can move a counter onto it, and then I can steal it with this other guy later. So Graft is a very powerful mechanic. It was what made me want to at least add green. And then I was like, well, there's no four-color commanders, and I might as well just add white if I can. The other key cards, because Marchesa is buried in your deck, you need to tutor for Marchesa, but you added green, and green's the best color for finding creatures. So I use Survival of the Fittest and Fauna Shaman. Both of them do basically the same thing. Survival of the Fittest is an enchantment for 2 mana, and it says, pay a green, choose and discard a creature card, search your library for a creature card, reveal that card to all players, and then put it into your hand and shuffle your library. So you basically say, oh, I've got this creature in my hand, I'm going to discard it and then go find whatever creature I want for my deck. Fauna Shaman does the same thing, but she's a 2/2 creature and you have to tap her when you do it. So Survival of the Fittest is obviously better.
Oh, yeah.
However, in this deck, you actually want creatures over non-creatures because Child of Alara is going to destroy everything when it goes. But Marchesa only brings creatures back. She doesn't bring enchantments or artifacts back.
Oh, right.
So you basically want to really heavily skew towards creatures because Marchesa can protect those and recur those, whereas the other stuff is harder. Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't want it. It's just harder to protect.
Graft, so good in this deck.
Yeah.
There's a reason that she's not in the colors with Graft. It's because she would be broken
exactly.
if you could have Graft in her colors. So you made it happen.
So I was trying to break her, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's, by the way, the 2 colors that she's not is really good for her, except for blue. Blue's kind of shared, but...
Yeah, but white and green are both great. And then one more key card I'll talk about is another green card. It's an enchantment. It's 2/2 green. It says, sacrifice a creature, draw... Or it's called Greater Good. I should say the name of the card, Josh. Greater Good, 2/2 green enchantment. Sacrifice a creature... draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature's power, then discard 3 cards. So a lot of times, even if it's just a 3-power creature, you're happy. You're just cycling through cards because you're looking for Marchesa or you're looking for other key cards. But most of the time, you're like, I'll sack a 6-drop, draw 6 cards, and then discard 3.
Yeah, or so, I'll sack this card because it's coming back at the end of the turn, and I'll graft more stuff onto it.
Exactly.
Why don't you talk about the order that you have to put creatures back in on? Because you get to choose which creatures come back in which order with her ability, correct?
Right. So you stack it so the graft guy hits the table first, and then she comes back in, and you graft onto her, and then Child of Lara comes back in, and you graft onto that. And now if you have that, that's 3 creatures, all with +1/+1 counters on it. And so now you're set up to, again, just sack Child of Lara.
Mm-hmm.
Destroy the board, do the exact same thing at the next end step. So if you have a graft guy, Marchesa, and Child of Alara and a sack outlet, then you're in that loop where you can wrath everything every turn. It's not infinite.
Well, you're also specifically using land sack outlets too, notably,
yes.
Because otherwise Child of Alara would blow up like an Ashnod's Altar or whatever. You
Correct.
Want like high market.
You want your sack outlets on a creature because you can protect the creature or on a land if you can. Now, it's okay to have some that are on enchantments, but you just know that they're going to go away when you use Child of Lara. So,
yeah.
Let's talk about some cards that were in the old build but aren't here anymore. So I was looking through, and I literally changed almost the entire deck. There's very few cards that are left from the original, but notably, Grave Pact and Dictate of Erebos did not make my deck.
Interesting.
Which is super surprising.
Is it because Child of Lara does what they're trying to do?
It's exactly why. I had them in for a little while, and I eventually took them out because, yeah, Child of Lara is destroying all the creatures, so why do I need more cards in the deck? And that's my general.
Right.
So I don't need more cards in the deck that destroy creatures because I'm not worried about creatures. Child of Lara takes care of all of them.
Good job, Child of Lara.
Good job, Child of Lara. And then let's talk about some cards that are still in there from the old deck. So there's only a couple, but turns out Glen Alendra, Archmage, is still good in this deck.
Yeah. It's good in my deck, too.
Yeah. It's 3 and a blue for a creature fairy wizard. She's a 2/2 flyer. It says, pay 1 blue, sacrifice Glen Alendra, counter target non-creature spell. But because that's not good enough, she has Persist. And what Persist is when this creature dies, if it had no -1/-1 counters on it, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a -1/-1 counter on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way this interacts with Graft is, that you sack her, she dies, she comes back, you graft onto her, it negates the -1/-1 counter, and then she's just a 2/2 flyer with no counters on her again.
Yeah. At a certain point, it hits her, and she has both the +1/+1 counter and the -1/-1 counter, and then when it resolves, they look at each other and they go, boop.
We don't need both of these because they cancel each other out, and then they go away. Yeah. Yep. So her with graft means you can counter a whole lot of non-creature spells. I mean, it's not infinite because eventually your graft guy will run out of counters, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And she works really well with Marchesa, because again, you stack all the triggers, you make the graft guy come in first, and you can make all this happen. She gets pretty broken.
She is. By the way, I just realized this, but Glen Alendra is a place, so that's not her name. Her name is not Glen Alendra.
Really?
Glen Alendra is like a plane. Yeah, you could get to it in Plane Chase and stuff. It's actually, she's an archmage from Glen Alendra. So it's a Glen Alendra
archmage.
She's just archmage? Archmage, yeah. She's not a legendary creature. She doesn't need a name.
Oh, that's a good point. Man, there's such a powerful card, and it's just an archmage. That means there's a whole lot of these on that plane?
I guess so. I mean,
that's a scary place, man. I don't want to go there. You can't cast any spells there.
Pretty good first line of defense. It's just a bunch of Glen Alendra archmages hanging around.
All right. Well, good to know.
But I've always just thought of her name as Glen Alendra. Yeah.
It was weird for a chick to be named Glenn, but I was just rolling with it.
Yeah, or fairy wizard in this case, sorry.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Not just any normal girl.
Right.
She's a fairy wizard. And she's flying, Josh.
Sorry.
And she has persist.
I just thought...
You can kill her and she'll
come
back.
It wasn't about her
back.
Being a girl at all. It was the fact that she was named Glenn.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Glenn.
I was just saying that's not a feminine name.
I know, we've got like crazy names like Shieldred. And then there's like, oh, she's Glenn.
No offense, Glenn.
Jones?
Yeah, no offense, Glenn. Secluded Glenn.
Secluded Glenn. Miss you, buddy. Hope you can make it to GP Vegas, but if work is there, then...
Oh, yeah. Bring your Sadisi deck. We've got to play that thing again.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. Okay. And then the other card that's still around from the old version is Toxic Deluge, which
same
is
with
one
my
of the,
deck, too.
Yeah, one of the great
Both these cards
wipes.
Are just so good.
That's just a card that's... If you're playing black, you're probably playing Toxic Deluge.
Oh, that's just another way to mitigate life stuff, because you could Toxic Deluge for more than you have to.
It's a really
just
good
to get
point.
Under Dethrone again, you know?
Yeah, my deck doesn't use Dethrone a lot, but it does sometimes just by happenstance.
Yeah.
But yeah, Toxic Deluge is 2 and a black, and then all creatures get -X/-X, where X is the amount of life you pay when you cast Toxic Deluge.
So 3-drop kill everything if you want to in Commander.
It's one of the best board wipes you can have, and it kills indestructible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very powerful. Okay, let's talk about some cards from new sets. So I also have Sadisi Undead Vizier. That's the one that comes in, exploits, and then Demonic Tutors.
You got to be able to find your commander if you need it.
I have Dagatar, the Adamant.
Ooh.
So this is a good one. He's 3 and a white for a legendary creature. He's a 0/0. He has Vigilance. Dagatar, the Adamant, enters the battlefield with 4+1/+1 counters on it. And then you can play 1 and then Golgari twice. So 3 mana total. It's 1 and 2 black, 1 and 2 green, or 1 a black and a green. And then you can move a +1/+1 counter from target creature onto a second target creature. So notably, you can steal +1/+1 counters from your opponents, or you can just move your own around, which is very powerful because you just move them off of him onto Marchesa for 3 mana. So again,
or a graft creature that is like out of ammo or something.
You can move it. And also, if you have a graft creature that gives an ability, but it only gives an ability to something that has a +1/+1 counter, you can sort of throw your counters around, which is very powerful in the deck.
Yeah.
Another card is Hardened Scales. It's 1 green for an enchantment. This is from Cons. If 1 or more +1/+1 counters would be placed on a creature you control, that many +1/+1/+1 counters are placed on it instead. So it gets an extra counter. Mm-hmm. This works with graft. So you play your graft guy, it gets an extra counter. Then you play Marchesa and you move 1 counter onto her, but it actually becomes 2 counters when it hits her. So, and notably, I didn't put Doubling Season in the deck, which you'd think I would because I'm playing around with +1/+1 counters, but I realized pretty early on that I don't need 50 +1/+1 counters on anybody. I just need one.
Right, and Hardened Scales makes it so that your graph guys just get a little extra buff.
And it only costs 1 mana.
And the thing is, if you're going to play Doubling Season, you should be abusing the token part of it as well. So if you're just doing it for the +1/+1 counters, Hardened Scales is a much better bet for something that is way less threatening to the people on the board. Because if people don't understand how the deck works, they'll see Doubling Season and be like, this guy's going to do some broken things with doubling everything, but really you're not. It doesn't actually matter.
That's actually a really good point, and the biggest reason was just that Doubling Season makes people automatically think you're going to just kill everybody the next turn. And Hardened Scales, super innocuous. You play Hardened Scales, people go, what's that do? Okay, they don't even raise an eyebrow. And then we're always looking for cards that sort of double up what our commander does. This is maybe because we were so used to Tuck for so long, but mm-hmm. also it's just a good idea to have redundancy in your deck. And so I added Bearer of the Heavens.
This guy's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I just realized the text on this doesn't specify any non-land. It's just...
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So Bearer of the Heavens is the win. It very often will win the game once you get it. It's 7 and a red, so 8 mana total for a 10/10 creature giant. It says, when Bearer of the Heavens dies, destroy all permanents at the beginning of the next end step. All permanents.
Yeah.
So if you get a 1/1 counter on it with Graft and Marchesa is out, then all you got to do is sack Bearer of the Heavens, and at the next end step, everything will go away.
And you still have a 10/10 with a +1/+1
counter. And you still have Marchesa, and you still have your Graft guy. You know, you're in great shape because you have 3 or 4 creatures.
You definitely don't have a sack outlet unless it's on a creature.
Yeah, unless it's on a creature. But because your stuff recurs...
Yeah.
Then, one thing we didn't mention about Child of Alara that's important to note is that Child of Alara actually has to hit the graveyard to have its effect.
Oh, right.
So Child of Alara says, when Child of Alara dies, destroy all non-land permanents. They can't be regenerated. Well, that doesn't work if you put it directly into the command zone. It has to actually go to the graveyard, which is why it's so perfect with Marchesa, because with Marchesa, the stuff goes to the graveyard and sits there and then comes back at the end step. So all these abilities are triggered.
Yeah.
Bearer of the Heavens is the same way. If it got exiled, it wouldn't do its thing. Mm-hmm. But if it goes to the graveyard, then it does. So,
yeah, it's scary to play against this deck. I remember playing against it once with one of my best decks, and I maybe made one mistake. And it was like I was constantly fighting to get through all your guys and to like keep the board clean and just stop as many shenanigans as possible. But it still pushed through, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah, if you land that combo where you can basically recur Child of Alara with Marchesa out and a Graft guy, then it's really hard for any decks to do anything because they just can't keep any non-land permanents on the table.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is there's a lot of utility with all the creatures with Graft, and there's a few other guys that care about, they give abilities and stuff with +1/+1 counters.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's a guy that's just a fog on a stick for, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And that card is super powerful in the deck because what you do is you pay a couple mana, take a +1/+1 counter off it, and then you fog whenever you want. And so that actually stops people from attacking you, and it makes it so that you just survive until the combo gets going. And there's a lot of stuff like that in the deck. So a lot of utility. It plays it's control-y. It's usually just trying to control the board, control the action out there, and not die until it can get that engine going.
Yep. Good job, Josh. He terrorized the board again.
All right. So that is a pretty cool look at how we took a deck that we initially built and then found it to be lacking and then went in two different directions with it. There's actually other directions you can probably go with Marchesa. That's just the two that we went. Yeah, a lot of decks probably need that. I mean, honestly, I probably have 2 decks right now that I could do that to, that same philosophy of like,
make the 5 color.
No, I just mean like totally retune it. Just give it an overhaul.
Make it 5 color.
Make it 5 color. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so
at some point you're going to run out of lands to keep doing this. That's what I keep telling myself.
Well, I just keep buying more lands. Yeah, you know, that's the problem.
Yeah.
This is probably the last deck I have enough old school dual lands to actually do, so
nice.
So in a way you're correct.
Ha-ha! No more 5-color beasts from Josh. Yeah. Tuning decks is very important. It's something that we'll probably cover way more in the future, but it's always good to... No deck's ever finished, especially because new cards are coming out. They'll give you new ideas, and in Marchesa's case, there's a lot of really fun stuff that came out in these past like half a year that has all been excellent for the deck.
And now all that graph stuff's coming out in Modern Masters 2015, so if anybody wants to build that type of deck, now's the time.
Yeah, that Plaxcaster frog thing is definitely in Modern Masters 15.
That thing is pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, let's go to the end step.
End step.
I have a pretty cool one. It's St. Jude's Children's Hospital combined with the Mana Source. So our buddy Wedge has been doing some fundraising for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. I donated when they did a Twitch stream of the podcast with the professor. And... you know, at the time you're listening to this, I'm not 100% sure that he's still running that charity. If he is, you should go through the Mana Source, and I definitely encourage you to donate to the Children's Hospital. I mean, you can't find a better cause. But also, if he's not running that event, you can still donate to St. Jude's Children's Hospital.
Definitely.
It's a very good cause. It's the type of hospital where they take in sick kids, and then once they've taken them in, they pay for everything. So they're run by these fundraising activities, and they really... you know, allow families and people that wouldn't be able to afford the kind of treatment that they need to get it. So it's yeah. super important.
Medical bills are so hard, especially on families that have a child that is sick, because it's something that completely warps the family's life around. And if they can't get to the amount of money they need, you know, it's really important to get the money for these kind of things, because it really does change people's lives.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm definitely a big proponent of just charities in general. And St. Jude is a great children's research hospital.
It's one of the top in the nation. They do really good work. I mean, it's definitely a worthy cause. You couldn't find a more worthy cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll have, of course, all those links in the show notes, and we'll tweet them out as well.
Okay, time for the big giveaway.
And the moment you've all been waiting for, we have winners.
Oh, so exciting.
Woo! Prize time for everyone that entered in our contest. A reminder, if you guys did not know what's going on, we are giving away copies of The Warded Man by Peter Brett. It's an awesome book. It's a fantasy book. We've talked about it a bunch on the show, and Del Rey reached out to us and helped us facilitate this awesome giveaway. So we have 10 winners, and the question was, out of the Modern Masters 2015 set, what card are you looking the most forward to, and which deck is it going to make its way into?
Yeah, we had a lot of people interested in winning this book, and we had a lot of entries, and it was really actually interesting to see what people said. I would say that Elish Norn was easily far and away the number one card that most of our listeners were excited about.
I mean, it fits the whole, is also a legendary creature, so it could also be a commander. So I think it hit all the marks. It's a great EDH card. It's a great commander. It's a great a lot of things.
I mean, that card is just a house.
Yeah, I doubt you can find a white deck or a deck that has white that would not want that card.
I mean, it's never bad.
Yeah,
like, exactly. I don't care what your deck's doing. If you put Elish Norn out, it's always going to do something good for you.
Yeah. Precisely. All right, so we're going to select our 10 winners now. Thank you guys so much for participating. This is great because this also shows us that we can do other kinds of giveaways, not just Magic related, and that means that our giveaways for you guys is that just expands the field for what we can do for you in the future.
Yeah, speaking of Elish Norn.
Oh yeah, exactly. Number one, our first winner is Donald Warner at Donald S. Angry, or Donald's Angry, I guess, not Donald S. Angry. And he said, Elish Norn for my Gaddock Teague to take more fun from people. Oh. I guess.
Hey, it could be worse. It could be Iona.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my gosh. Your deck is just built around putting Iona out and Elish. Okay, yes. Congratulations, Donald. You want to go for the next one?
Sure. Wally Boulard.
It's French.
Wally Boulard.
Who knows?
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
I hope that's actually how you pronounce it. If not, his Twitter name is @ManaSculptor. And Wally said, Bitter Blossom for my Anafenza EDH deck.
That's the one card I wanted to get for Anafenza that I didn't, because it was just so expensive. So I'm glad that he has the same thoughts.
Yeah, Wally and you are simpatico.
Yeah. Also, not to mention, if you get Bitter Blossom in draft, oh my goodness.
Oh, you win, probably.
It's okay when you're behind, but it's still pretty okay when you're behind, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, if you could just live one more turn, then you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. All right, our third winner is Marissa Miller @Das_Shishka. And she said, pumped about Dark Confidant for my Erebos God of Nope attrition /control deck. More draw, please.
God of Nope. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. That's really fun. Awesome. I've actually never played against an Erebos deck. I bet it would be very effective.
Not if she's saying nope all the time.
Yeah, well, not effective for other people, but for herself, it's awesome.
Oh, it's effective for her. Yeah. That's a good point. I meant, yeah, I wouldn't feel effective. That's what I mean. The fourth winner is Matt Lewis @LewisMD13. He says, I like this wording, I need a foil Mystic Snake for my Sidisi spider spawning deck. Oh, yeah, this is the guy that was building a Sidisi deck, and then he heard our Brian David Marshall episode where BDM talked about his Sidisi, the spider-spawning part, and then he was, like, got all inspired and used a lot of that stuff, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. Also, I mean, because every pack of Modern Masters has a foil in it, the chances of you getting a foil Mystic Snake are actually pretty good.
That card's actually one of the cards that I'm most excited about, just from an art standpoint, because the card just looks really good with the new border and everything.
Yeah, it does. Also notably, that card is also a powerhouse, I guess, in Marshall's Animar deck. So two guest decks that both use Mystic Snake Also, two guests that both love blue-green. I wonder why. All right, number five, we have Ray Tomlin at Ray716 underscore, who said, I'm really looking forward to getting a copy of Vendillion Click. I love the art and want to make a deck based on that card. That would be very interesting to play against because it feels like it's very good one-on-one. I'd love to see how you could play it politically with a Flicker or what have you to make it into a commander.
Yeah, Click seems like it would be just broken in one-on-one, but it'd be way tougher when you get to about four players. So
yeah.
Interesting, but, interesting.
But who doesn't love a challenge? All right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Number six is Chad Martinell. Chad was via email, so I don't have a Twitter handle. He says, Wilt Leaf Liege, and it will be going in my Gave deck. Also, shout out to Kozilek because I don't own one yet.
And he's talking about Kozilek Butcher of Truth specifically.
Yeah. I don't own a Kozilek either, Chad. So yeah. I'm with you.
Me, I'm with you as well. I can't wait to play one specifically against Craig because he's played one against me multiple times.
He played one against us just the other night,
yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, in his Rakdos deck. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
You pretty much got every legal Eldrazi out on us in that single game. So
yeah, I was just like, we're dead, right? I mean, are we dead?
We're
He's like, no,
dead.
Just sacrifice six permanents. Okay.
We're like, all right, thank you, Annihilator, for really making things fun. Okay. Number seven, we have Gabriel Robinson at Tap for Red. I already like you, Gabriel. I like what you're doing here. He said, I'm really excited for the reprint of Splinter Twin. All right. I'm really liking you, Gabriel. I already own Kiki Jiki, and it will work very well in my Purphoros deck. So, Gabriel, I believe we are of the same spirit animal, if these are.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are soulmates or something.
Yeah, pretty much. in that case, Kiki Jiki also I would love to get, just to have more, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I would love for you to not get more of that.
Yeah, I love that card too much.
All right, number eight is Christopher Bond. Christopher Bond. I was like, did that even make sense? I'm glad it did. Okay, he says, Apocalypse Hydra, it would go in my Prosh deck. P.S. Really Tarmogoyf so I can sell it and buy several EDH decks.
That's true.
That's smart thinking, Christopher.
Yeah, a single Tarmogoyf could buy you like every colored set from, commander set from 2014 and 13, I think. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, probably. So you could literally get 10 decks out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good value for a single card that's bad in our format. So, excellent. Hope it's foil, buddy. Hope it's foil.
Then you can get even more.
Yeah. Number nine, Wes Kane at Dave's Golden Duck said, Elish Norn, Grand Cenobite for my Duran EDH deck. By the way, great podcast. Thank you, Wes. Yeah, that's actually pretty good for Duran because you don't really care about the power boost, but it is nice to just have plus two toughness across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's still giving plus two, basically. And yeah. Also, it still kills all your opponent's stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And the last one, number 10, is Mark Gison Paulino at the Jylox. Jylox? Sure. At the JY Lox. He says, looking to get a cryptic command with that sweet new modal formatting for my Dragonlord Ojutai deck.
Ooh, very nice. In fact, I'm surprised I didn't see more Cryptic Command because that card is incredibly excellent in our format.
Yeah, quite a few people said it. I think, you know, again, these are just chosen at random, so we got just a... There's a high variance sample there.
True that.
Oh, we should say what you need to do if you heard your name as one of the winners, you need to email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com and you need to let us know that what your name was, that you're one of the winners, and then you have to give us your mailing address, and then Del Rey will be sending you your shiny new copy of The Warded Man. And I'm totally jealous of all of you because it's a sweet book.
And you get to experience it for the first time.
That's
the best way to experience a new book.
And Jimmy, so do you.
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking forward to it. I believe we got a copy sent to our office. I did not enter the contest, but if I had to enter, I would probably say Cryptic Command because I just want them all for my decks. Just more Cryptic Commands.
I have to go with Karn.
Oh, but, yes, actually, Karn. Yeah, Karn is definitely pretty good. All right. Well, that's it, everybody. If you did not win, don't worry. You can still get a hold of the book on Amazon, on your Kindle. You can go to the bookstore, Barnes & Noble, all that stuff. Definitely check it out and let us know what you guys think, especially Josh, because Josh has read it and he knows the series quite well.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how people like the book. And if you've read the series, I'm interested in, like, you know, what you think, how it's going to end or what you think is going to happen and stuff like that. It's always fun to talk about. So, and for those of you that just won it, I hope you enjoy it. And guys, if you did not win, this is a thing that we're hoping to do on a fairly regular basis with Del Rey. So there will be hopefully more books coming down the pipe and, you know, there'll be more chances to win.
Yeah, that's super awesome. I can't wait to do more giveaways. It's one of the more fun parts of the podcast because we get to give back to you guys who listen, rate us highly on iTunes, and tweet at us and all this fun stuff. And hopefully soon get to hang out with us in Vegas. Woohoo!
All right, congratulations to everybody. I'm really excited that everyone's getting this book. It's one of my favorites. I love it. I've read it quite a few times, like I said. I would be excited to hear anybody's thoughts on the book, any of you winners or anybody that just goes and grabs it on their own after you've checked it out, how you liked it, what mm-hmm. you think. Also, the series is not done, so any cool speculation about how you think it's going to end. And you can follow Peter V. Brett, the author, at PV Brett on Twitter, and I would encourage you to do that also. All right, guys. Don't forget, GP Vegas, The Gathering.
Vegas, it's going to be
awesome. Vegas, The Gathering. It's going to be awesome. In the show notes, you can find all the information to the Facebook event page. Definitely check it out. If you're planning on coming, please let us know. Mm-hmm. Also, listen to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. It's at the MMcast on Twitter. Alex and Ben do a great job there. They talk about competitive magic. They're also going to be in Vegas at The Gathering. You can meet those guys there, and you can team up and beat them at EDH. Jimmy and I will team up with you.
Oh, in a heartbeat, we'll team up with you. I should mention, by the way, I'm going to also be reading the Warded Man with everyone else because we're going to get a copy at the office, and I can't wait. I've never read it before. I've heard so much about it, and I'm going to read it as well. So you'll hear my thoughts about it soon.
Ooh, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear your thoughts, and I'm excited for you to read it. I mean, you're really the lucky person in this because you're getting something awesome and new, and I'm not.
I don't know.
It's awesome, but it's not new.
You did get Legacy of the Void beta.
That, actually, I'm the real winner in that. That's a good point. That's touche, my friend. Touche.
Yeah.
You're still my hero for that.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.